Good afternoon. Today is April 6th, 2017. Welcome to our Subcommittee on Public Safety. We will continue our public hearing on House Bill 5015, and today we are taking public testimony. We will attempt to go, assuming I can tell by how it's marked, we'll try to go through people who are elected officials first, as usual. We do have a couple lists of signups, so ideally 5 minutes at the most, okay? So on that note, I know my, Rep. Nierman has another committee to testify in, so come on up, Mr. Nierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to keep this as quickly as I can. Okay. So, Chair Stark and members of the committee, for the record, my name is State Representative Mike Nierman, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. I have 2 points to make today. In 2014, some politically motivated charges were filed against me and referred to the Secretary of State's office, to the Justice Department, where an investigation was started. After a few weeks not finding anything criminal, the investigation was returned to the Secretary of State's office, where it was closed. In late October of last year, during the heat of the general election, the Attorney General's office confirmed several times to a reporter at the Statesman Journal that this investigation was still open. Shortly before a contested general election, the headline was published, Justice Department investigation of Rep. Nierman's campaign finances nears conclusion. I believe there's a strong possibility that this response from the Justice Department was politically motivated. At best, it was very sloppy behavior and caused me no end of stress and having to put out fires when I should have been focused on a campaign. Mr. Co-Chair, I think in the interest of providing justice to the citizens of the state of Oregon, including me, the Department of Justice needs to be transparent about what happened and what they need to do to make sure that others aren't treated similarly. So that was the headline one day, and I believe it was the next day, the headline was on that. The case was accidentally left open, officials confirmed there. My second point is this. In 2014, at the request of some of my fellow citizens, I was the co-petitioner on a citizens initiative petition to make English the official language of the state of Oregon. So, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, you may agree or disagree with this idea, but at the very least, I hope you agree that anyone should have the right to get out the clipboards and gather the 88,000-plus signatures and place an initiative on the ballot. And what you see on your screen there is the ballot title generated by the Justice Department as part of the constitutional process. Before the state Supreme Court, the attorney we hired before the state Supreme Court described the title as word salad. The court agreed, and the title was remanded to the Justice Department to be redone. The second try was a bit better, but because of the expense, loss of time, and inadequacy of the second title, we decided to not go forward with the campaign. So, Mr. Co-Chair, I believe that the Justice Department owes justice to all the citizens of the state of Oregon, whether it be communicating with the media about the status of an investigation or the crafting of a ballot title that will be presented to Oregonians to decide if they want to place it on the ballot or ultimately if they want to make it a part of Oregon law. And I've proposed 2 budget notes which require the Justice Department to review and revise their policy for closing and communicating about investigations and for generating ballot titles, which I hope will make the Justice Department better able to provide justice for the citizens of the state of Oregon, including me. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Are there any questions for Rep. Nierman? All right. And Rep. Nierman, I'm assuming that you've submitted those to the co-chairs of the full Ways and Means Committee, or that you will be doing that as far as the budget notes.
I will be doing that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. That is the typical protocol. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Okay. So we are going starting here. All right. Just to warn everybody, I make it my goal every day to say something wrong, and it usually has to do with mispronouncing names. And sometimes that's your guys' writing, though, by the way. But so if I mispronounce your name, I apologize. When you introduce yourself for the record, then you can correct me at that point. We are going to start out with John Teague, did I say it? And Jason Myers.
It's so nice to come first.
It was a shock.
You're here.
Chair Stark, members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to speak in favor of the Criminal Justice Division of DOJ. I want to remind you that Connecticut has the highest ratio of law enforcement of police officers to citizens in the United States, and Oregon has the fewest.
Yes, please introduce yourself for the record.
I forgot that. Thank you. John Teague, Chief of Police, City of Kaiser.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. I want to remind you again that Connecticut has the highest ratio of cops to citizens, and Oregon has the lowest. And frankly, I'm not complaining about that. I'm not sure I want to live somewhere where you have cops running around looking for things to do. What that does tell you, though, is that in Kaiser, in Oregon, we're efficient. And every part of our system matters, and no small part of that system is the Criminal Justice Division at DOJ. I work at the City of Kaiser. I've also worked at the City of Dallas, and I think we're reflective of all of those agencies in Kaiser that aren't large in Oregon, that are not large agencies. I want to talk to you about my experience with CJ just at Kaiser in Dallas. They give us technical assistance around equipment. They help us with RICO investigations, including organized retail crime. We have an outdoor shopping mall in Kaiser. We have groups that work California, Oregon, and Washington. It's simply beyond the capacity of the City of Kaiser to work those organized gangs. CJ provides crucial information and assistance for us to do that. We have a Mongols clubhouse in Kaiser. CJ monitors outlaw motorcycle gangs. We rely upon the Fusion Center to give us timely and appropriate information around terrorist incidents and other high-profile crimes. While CJ only has one seat at the table while they're editing the search and seizure manual, every time that comes out, I get a copy. I make additional copies. It's required reading at Kaiser. We're thankful for CJ's seat at the table there to give the cops perspective in the development of the search and seizure manual. I've twice had to develop, we've twice run criminal investigations into financial crimes that numbered in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, one of them with an elderly woman. We turned to DOJ, to the Criminal Justice Division, to help us with those crimes. I think there are a few agencies in the state that have the capacity to deal with financial crimes the way CJ does. And I want to encourage God's blessings upon Michael Slosser for his attention to financial crimes in CJ. That division was let to slide a little bit for years, and I'm grateful for his attention to that. Finally, I have worked a corruption case, and those fall squarely in the bailiwick at DOJ. I appreciate their emphasis on that. And finally, something I'm glad I don't have to work is ICAC, the International Crimes Against Children, that resides squarely at DOJ. I have a favorable disposition towards CJ at DOJ, and I hope you do too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Stark, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jason Myers. I'm the Marion County Sheriff. I'm here today testifying in support of the Department of Justice budget. I'll keep my remarks brief. The chief did a really good job of touching on a number of issues, but I've had the opportunity over the last 2 years to work very closely with the Department of Justice in a number of different venues. One has been on the Racial Profiling Task Force, which was led by our Attorney General and Erin Knott, her assistant. And I'll say that the leadership within the Department of Justice is top-notch, and the interaction that we have in the law enforcement realm is excellent. And their focus on very unique niche in what they do in criminal justice and assisting both district attorneys and local law enforcement with unique and sometimes very specialized investigations. So they are great partners. As the chief mentioned, we don't have a lot of resources in criminal justice around the state of Oregon, so we need that specialization and that assistance. They are there and help agencies across our state. So I'd ask for your support and their funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for these two?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you,
gentlemen.
Nice to see you both.
Thank you.
And next up, we have Mark Garten and Tim Callahan.
I slurred that one.
I know Tim's name.
I guess I could do three, but then they're stuck behind the computer.
Want me to go?
Yeah.
All right.
That's okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Garten. I'm the Polk County Sheriff. And I just wanted to be able to come here and show the reasons that I would support especially the Titan Fusion Center at the Criminal Justice Division. It is really an invaluable resource that all law enforcement officers use, whether they realize it or not, because information is shared nationally, locally, both directions, up and down, and there's really no other agency that can do that, especially reaching all corners of the state. They're pretty good at it, and they've done it for a short while. And there's information that comes that really could be affecting the jurisdiction of where the officer is or deputy. And so the information we get is important, and they really do play a significant role in helping all of us achieve our mission on a daily basis. So I would just ask that you would continue supporting the Department of Justice and the Titan Fusion Center.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Stark, members of the committee. My name is Tim Colahan. I'm Executive Director for the District Attorneys Association. I'm here supporting the budgets of both the Criminal Justice Division and the Crime Victim Services Division of the Department of Justice. DAs rely on both of these divisions every day, 365 days a year. And particularly in the area of the Criminal Justice Division, the District Attorney Assist Program provides expert trial assistance in complex cases involving complicated issues dealing with legal and also technical issues, especially to the small and medium counties. I served as DA for 30 years in Harney County. I relied on the Department of Justice many times for assistance for trial purposes, particularly in the area of aggravated homicides, cases of that nature. And simply, smaller counties just do not have the resources to handle those types of cases. Criminal Justice Division is also responsible for around-the-clock offering of technical assistance and advice to DAs and deputy DAs across the state. This allows for the fair and efficient application of the laws across the state of Oregon. It also saves the state money because it prevents appeals, and it also prevents having to retry these cases, which is a very costly thing to do. The Criminal Justice Division also provides excellent training yearly for DAs and deputy DAs across the state on a myriad of topics that are important to the job we do. In that area of advice and training, specifically, criminal justice has resource prosecutors in the area of domestic violence, driving under the influence of intoxicants, elder abuse, as well as the internet crimes against children, which is referred to as ICAC, which you've heard of before. The ICAC investigators also provide forensic analysis services for computers and cameras and things, which simply is not available in many spots of the state of Oregon. ICAC also provides training, as well as the domestic violence resource prosecutor, and the money for that training comes from the punitive damages fund, and DA specifically ask you to not, if possible, cut that fund because that provides very important training on those issues. On the criminal, the crime victim services area, DAs across the state have programs that provide assistance to victims. We have constitutional and statutory requirements to provide them services as well as helping them understand their rights. Those programs are funded primarily by the state, and that comes through the criminal injuries account, which is managed by the Crime Victim Services Division. Most of those programs only have one or perhaps two FTE positions to provide services across the state. So that funding is extremely important to victims in Oregon. And finally, Crime Victim Services is responsible for managing the Crime Victims Compensation Program, which provides funding for payment to victims of person crimes and sex abuse crimes. And in many cases, this is simply the only money that these victims are able to receive. It's extremely important, and it helps the DAs do their work every day. So I hope you can support that.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for these two?
Thank you.
Next up, we have Bradbury and Kelsey Balencipher.
Good afternoon.
I'm Bradbury. I'm Hill County District Attorney. Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee, thank you for this chance to come and support the budget request from the Attorney General's Office, and in particular the Department of Justice. I, too, am supportive of the Crime Victim Services Division. Tim Callahan and I talked ahead of time, since we're both coming from district attorney positions, to try not to repeat each other's thoughts, so I'll try to supplement what
thank
he had to say
that.
And add some others. I'm going to quickly focus on four areas, in particular the criminal justice Justice Division budget here, and I'll refer to it as CJ if that works, just to, for quickness. First, the CJ Division provides expertise to prosecutors all over the state. Advantage certainly in many counties. There are a lot of small counties and medium counties that don't have a lot of resources, and the ability to reach out to CJ at almost any time for expertise is invaluable. I might point out that at times where we're always talking about efficiency and not having redundancy in resources, the ability to have a central place that can aid district attorney's offices throughout the state is pretty important. Many of our offices, district attorney's offices, are small. For those of you who don't know, we always think of Multnomah County. It has some approximately 90 deputy district attorneys, but there are many small counties that have one or two deputy district attorneys, and some at times have only the district attorney serving at any particular time. The expertise includes various things, as Tim mentioned, but in particular the elder abuse, domestic violence, and DUII positions are utilized by my deputies almost every single day for information. Secondly, the CJ handles cases involving public officials. The ability to reach out to CJ for investigations into and potential prosecution of public officials who have crossed the line ensures not only the actual impartial investigation and prosecution, but assures the public that the cases are being handled in a way that is not influenced by the relationships that develop between elected officials within county boundaries. This is an issue of investigative integrity, as well as the appearance of integrity in how the system accuses and deals with public officials who have allegedly broken the law. Third, Tim mentioned ICAC, the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. The abuse to children that feeds the Internet with child pornography is horrendous. The use of Internet to lure, to entice children, to abuse is appalling. Child sex abusers hide behind the anonymity of a computer screen and keyboard and believe that they are beyond detection. An entity such as ICAC is absolutely necessary in this state to see that we have the ability to track these predators, to track them down, and to bring them to justice. And it is only fair to our children, who are the principal victims of these offenders, that we do so. Lastly, I want to share a personal story of how this division is essential to local prosecutors. Tim mentioned the assistance that CJ brings to DA offices. This can include assisting in prosecutions or completely taking over a prosecution. At the local level, we refer to this as the DA Assist Program. Seldom used by larger offices in the state, this is an invaluable resource to smaller offices and even to medium-sized offices such as mine. I have 8 criminal deputies. We all recognize the complicated murder case, a financial fraud case, can consume limited resources, and this program has countless times across the state assisted counties. My story. I have 8 deputy district attorneys doing criminal work in my office. Through a series of unrelated events, I lost one attorney who left my office when he didn't pass the bar. I had another resign, giving me 2 weeks' notice, an employee I'd had for over 15 years. One was leaving on a long-scheduled month-long trip with her parents to Europe. To make things worse, a 4th deputy DA came into my office, closed the door, and told me she would be out of the office for an undetermined period of time because she had just been diagnosed with cancer. In a matter of about 15 days, I went down 4 attorneys in an 8-attorney office. Major cases were set for trial within the next 30 days. I have 4 courts to tend to, not to mention regular processing of criminal intake, criminal cases, grand jury, search warrants, officer advice, and everything that comes with running a DA's office. What did I do? One of the first calls I made was to Michael Slauson at DOJ. I met with him and his immediate deputy and explained to them the issues and asked what help that they could provide. They readily said they would do what they could, and literally they were about to be assigned to take over a district attorney's office where the DA had been, I think had taken a judicial position and was an empty office. They immediately took on 4 cases that we had set for trial within the next 45 days, taking them completely off of our plate. They sent one of their lawyers to assist us one day a week with general duties, which is hard to understand, but the general stuff that comes in day to day to our deputies consumes their time, let alone trying to find time to try cases. Without this assistance, I may well have been in a position to delay resolution of cases through continuances, dismissal of cases that we were not ready because of lack of manpower to proceed on, release dangerous offenders who were being held pretrial and our time was up to get them to trial. I repeatedly thank Michael, Stephanie, the Attorney General, seated behind me here, for their assistance. The ability of a small or medium office to ask for and get such assistance is invaluable. There's really no other place to go when such a situation arises. Sudden major issues can come up, and when they do, they're there to help us in almost any way they can. I urge your support of their budget. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Stark, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Kelsey Ballen-Siefer, and I'm the event coordinator at the Astoria-Warrenton Area Chamber of Commerce located in Astoria, Oregon. Each fall for more than 30 years, our fine city has hosted a unique Oregon event, the Great Columbia Crossing. This 10K run walk allows participants to cross the beautiful Astoria-Megler Bridge on foot, the only day annually that pedestrian traffic is allowed on the structure. It is both an incredibly scenic and a highly challenging course, starting at Dismal Ditch, Washington, and ending in Astoria, after conquering a steep incline on the longest continuous truss bridge in North America. The event has changed hands over the years, but our chamber has organized it since 2001. The Great Columbia Crossing requires the partnership of more than 60 different agencies, municipalities, organizations, and contractors, including Pacific County, Clatsop County, the City of Astoria, the Oregon Department of Transportation, the Washington State Department of Transportation, Oregon State Police, Washington State Patrol, the U.S. Coast Guard, and the Port of Astoria. But I'm here today to talk about one specific partner, the Oregon Titan Fusion Center. Following the Boston Marathon bombing in the spring of 2013, our staff worked with local law enforcement to reevaluate the safety and security plan for our event. It was at that time that we began coordinating with the Titan Fusion Center. Initially, Titan provided us with a detailed threat analysis that critically examined our existing security measures and recommended additional measures to enhance the safety of our event. Local law enforcement involved in the event have been impressed and appreciative of the steps that we have taken thanks to the Titan Fusion Center's recommendations. Since that first year, Titan has continued to provide annual threat assessments for the Great Columbia Crossing, helping us ensure that our security plan stays up to date. They have also coordinated with other local law enforcement agencies to make our event successful and safe, helping us acquire support from canine officers for several years. I cannot say enough about the Titan Fusion Center and the assistance it provides. The Astoria-Warrenton Area Chamber understands the importance of information sharing and keeping Oregon citizens aware of the current terrorism and criminal threats, especially those that may affect our 10K. I'll be frank with you. Acts of terrorism that target sporting events, festivals, or celebrations, like the Boston Marathon bombing and the Bastille Day truck attack in France, keep me up at night. It's an overwhelming responsibility to know that the safety of thousands of event participants rests on our team and our preparation. And in our constantly changing world, it's hard to stay on top of the latest threats. The committed partnership of the Oregon Titan Fusion Center eases my mind and allows us to provide a secure race experience to our Great Columbia Crossing participants. Because the only thing our runners should have to worry about is setting a new PR or qualifying for a marathon. The only thing our walkers should have to be concerned about is enjoying the views and tackling that massive hill. The last thing they should have to do is fear for their safety. The Great Columbia Crossing 10K Run Walk and the staff of the Astoria-Warrenton Area Chamber of Commerce support the Oregon Department of Justice, Criminal Justice Division, and the Oregon Titan Fusion Center. We believe it is essential to the continued safety and security of our event. And for those interested, we invite you to join us on the bridge for the 2017 Great Columbia Crossing on October 15th. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions?
We're all joining, right? We're all planning.
I'm considering it.
Well, he might do it. The rest of us?
That's
registration opens May 1st.
That's a week after Portland Marathon, right? Yeah. Which I think
so like doing. A true chamber director.
Well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Jay Bozovich and Jane Downing.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Stark and members of the subcommittee. My name is Jay Bozovich, and I'm a Lane County Commissioner and also co-chair of the Association of Oregon Counties Public Safety Committee. All 36 counties in AOC enjoy a strong working relationship with the Department of Justice. I would like to thank Attorney General Rosenblum for her leadership and also thank her staff that our counties interact with on a frequent basis. 2 years ago, AOC held a series of public safety summits around the state to highlight the decline of timber revenue and its effect on services in different areas of the state. The Attorney General and her staff attended each one and were able to effectively have open conversations about improved state and county relationships. Since then, the AG and her staff have stepped up to provide assistance to counties when counties needed it. And I'm just going to stop here for a moment based on the last couple testimonies and remind folks that Lane County will be hosting the 2021 World Track and Field Games.
Man, this is sounding like a booster club here in Cabell, Oregon.
But think about that. That is going to be an event that is going to qualify as a national security level event. We will be hosting people from over 200 countries with world leaders in attendance for close to a month. And the Fusion Center is going to be critical in providing information and coordination relative to the security of that event. It's a big event for Oregon. It's the first time the Worlds are being held in the U.S. It's the first time the Worlds are being held in Oregon. First time the Worlds are being held in Eugene. We want to make sure that is a safe and secure event, and we show our best foot at that time. Going back to my testimony here, protecting our crime victims is also an important part of DOJ. Victims in our communities are served by local programs funded through the Department of Justice and the Justice Reinvestment Program. We appreciate the Attorney General's support of these programs for victims, including the Justice Reinvestment, which you know is one of AOC's top priorities this session. I want to thank the Attorney General because with her help, stakeholders have been able to effectively discuss important and tough issues such as racial profiling, drug possession crimes, and aid and assist. Without her leadership, these policy bills would not be moving through the current session, and these policies are necessary for increased public safety. Attorney General Rosenblum's commitment to accountability and transparency is appreciated on all levels of government. We need our Justice Department to be able to hold elected officials, including county commissioners, responsible to the citizens they serve. We are proud to support the department's budget and ask that the legislature continue to fully fund all programs. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify today on House Bill 5015.
Thank you.
Chair Stark, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jane Downing, and I'm the executive director of the Center for Hope and Safety, serving Marion County. Our program helps victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking. And I wish I could think of some event to have you all invited to come. It just seems fitting right now. But really, I want to take a moment to say thank you. Thank you for the commitment that many of you have made to victim services in the state of Oregon. You've demonstrated that programs like the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund, which I'm here to talk about today, are critical to our state in providing services to victims of violence. And our program is just one of the programs in the state of Oregon, but I want you to understand the impact that those funds have. Last year alone, we had more than 20,000 contacts to our program, all kinds, people walking in. We moved our office. We're just right a little ways from here. Come visit us sometime if you have the time to do that. The first year we were there, we've been there 2 years. The first year we doubled the number of people walking in. The second year we doubled again. We know that we're reaching people and we're helping them. And yet we also know there are still more people. When you look at the Center for Disease Control numbers, they say that 37% of women in Oregon will be victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, or stalking in their lifetime. So that 20,000 number should be more like 40 to 50,000 of individuals coming to us and getting help and support. And so we know we're not there yet. And so we need your help to be able to reach even more people in our community. We know that cases have become more complicated. We're seeing more individuals who have co-occurring mental health, alcohol, and drug issues. And so that takes more collaboration, more coordination in our communities. And that takes time, and that takes advocates to be able to do that. If we were able to double the ODSVS funds, which is what we're asking you for, what I can tell you is you're going to see more shelter services in the state of Oregon. You're going to see more advocates on the ground working with people every single day, helping them to rebuild their lives, to be able to start over and become, you know, tax-paying citizens that are going to make a difference in the community. We see it every day in our work, and you're going to be able to see that impact too when you help programs to be able to do more. Every year, we talk to 3,000 to 4,000 students in the schools. Think about if we were able to add another youth advocate to be able to not only do more presentations, because we're only doing a small number of the schools right now, we could do so much more, helping them to understand about healthy relationships, teen dating violence, and so we can start to deal with this problem even earlier, even younger, so that hopefully one of these days we're going to reach our goal, which is to put ourselves out of a job. We work every day to be able to do that, and we want that. Hopefully you have all seen that programs like ours do a really good job with the resources that you give us. Please help us to be able to do even more in Oregon. We want to serve the folks in your communities and be able to help restore individuals who have been victimized. So I just want to say again, thank you so much for your willingness to consider this, and please support the increase in the ODSVS funds. Thank you.
Any questions for these two? Well, Commissioner, I do have to tell you that as much as I love Southern Oregon, my favorite place to run when it's not raining is Eugene. They have running space everywhere. So thank you. Appreciate your guys' testimony.
Thank you.
All right, next up we have Kelly Lawrence Gaddy and Carrie Moran Kuhn.
Good afternoon, Chair Stark, members of the committee. My name is Kelly Lawrence Gaddy. I'm a mother, an academic, a professional, and a domestic abuse survivor. Even in the early phase of my abuse, I considered myself a privileged person. Yet, I've repeatedly needed the varied and diverse resources provided by the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund, or ODSVS. My privilege ran out less than a year of taking the exhausting and frightening steps toward leaving with my 2.5-year-old daughter. Yet, I was a lucky one, in that I'd saved some money before I left. Honestly, my money gave me courage to leave. We had a friend's home to go to, so I had a safe haven, and knowing this gave me strength to leave. I consider myself one of the fortunate survivors. Since leaving my husband, my abuser, I've received many needed services funded by ODSVS, and I've met many abused women and their children who lived in their cars waiting for shelter space, women and children who fled without even bus fare in their pockets. Stop for a moment and really think. Being worn down emotionally and physically daily, yet gathering up enough will to live and protect your children. Being so unsafe with your intimate partner that you have to leave your home with beds and food and running water and go out into the unknown and live in a car to be safer. These survivors' strength and fortitude is mind-boggling. And as with me, the desire to keep our children safe is absolute and overrides the overwhelming challenges. Please help us with these challenges. Help us be safe so we can keep our children safe and give them opportunities to thrive. The money you invest now in increasing funding for ODSVS will help break the cycle of violence for future Oregon families. Also, by aiding the children impacted by domestic and sexual abuse now, the state is helping reduce the rates of addiction and mental illness later. No survivor leaves an abusive home unscathed. With an increase in ODSVS funding, you can give Oregonians and their children better. These additional dollars can save lives now and impact the physical and emotional health of lives of generations down the line. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Hello, and thank you for having us today. My name is Carrie Moran Kuhn, and I'm the Associate Director for the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. The Oregon Coalition has been working for almost 40 years now across Oregon on behalf of survivors of domestic and sexual violence, stalking, and human trafficking. We support and represent 49 of the domestic and sexual violence programs across Oregon. These programs are in our urban areas, our rural areas, our frontier areas, and across the tribal nations in Oregon. All of these programs provide vital services to each of the communities that they work within. They are a safe haven at a moment's notice for survivors. You heard from Jane today talking about the services here in Marion County, and you just heard from Kelly about some of the services that were vital for her and her family. The programs provide more than that. They provide expert safety planning, counseling, shelter, and they really are also there in times of medical need and legal accompaniment for support of survivors through some of the most difficult times in their lives after a very traumatic event. Currently, ODSVS, or the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund, is funded at $8.2 million. In 2006, Oregon's Department of Justice, along with the Department of Human Services, found that what was needed for emergency services, for those emergency service levels, was actually $32 million. So right now, we are less than 25% at what the state determined back in 2006 of what is needed. And what we know is that with the need for housing and the need that some of the more complications, as what Jane spoke about earlier, with mental health and substance abuse, is that those services are needed even more. So what we're asking today is that you meet us halfway and that we increase ODSVS by $8.2 million. If you have any questions for me about those services across Oregon, please feel free to ask them.
And are there any questions? All right. You guys are quite repugnant.
Thank you for your work, too.
Right. Yes.
Thank you.
All right. We have Michelle Roland Schwartz and Kim Larson next.
Good afternoon, Chair Stark and members of the committee. My name is Kim Larson. I'm the Director of Victim Assistance with the Marion County DA's office, and I'm here to testify in support of the Department of Justice budget, specifically with regard to the Crime Victim Services Division. My perspective is one of an advocate that's worked within the criminal justice process for more than 20 years, and I've seen firsthand the importance of the funding of the Crime Victim Services Division and its impact on victims. The funding that flows through that division and is administered by that division supports critical services all throughout the state of Oregon. It's instrumental in supporting victim assistance programs around the state, in every county and every district attorney's office. The need for critical services provided by victim assistance programs both throughout the communities and throughout the criminal justice process wouldn't be met without the funding provided through them. This funding helps levels the playing field across all of the state by providing equitable funding to help victims receive consistent services throughout the state, regardless of where they live or where their crime happened. Our services include some of the services that have been described already, with crisis intervention, safety planning, both for victims who are trying to navigate their world after their victimization, but also for participating in the criminal justice process, as well as victims' rights advocacy, accompaniment to court, and just making sure that people are connected to our community programs to help them continue to be able to move forward. For most victims, the criminal justice process on a good day is a really overwhelming process. On a bad day, it's terrifying. The availability of advocates that walk alongside victims throughout that process is critical as they make choices around participating in that process and being able to move forward in their lives. And all of those services are available to victims in large part because of the funding that's administered by the Crime Victim Services Division. In addition to administering grants, the funding that's provided to CVSD supports critical financial assistance for victims. There are very few financial resources available for victims, and the Crime Victims Compensation Program provides some of the most critical services available and the funding available. A lot of victims without that funding are forced to make choices between receiving critical help and services to help them move forward from the victimization or paying bills. Without that funding, those would be the choices. They'd be choosing between can they receive counseling services for the trauma that they've experienced, pay medical bills, visit doctors to receive care, or even replace eyeglasses that were broken during an assault. Because of crime victims' compensation, they don't have to make those choices. That funding is available to them. And finally, the CVSD funds provide funding for two really exceptional statewide educational and technical assistance programs through their DV Resource Prosecutor and the Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force. And I know there are others who are going to talk about those services, but from an advocate perspective, I want you to know the difference that it makes for victims when prosecutors are well-trained and have technical assistance in prosecuting domestic violence and sexual assault cases, which are often really difficult to prosecute. In addition to having stronger skills when they prosecute those cases, these well-trained prosecutors also know and understand the impact of trauma. They understand how it manifests in their cases. They understand how it impacts the victim's ability to even engage in the process. And their training allows them to provide a trauma-informed response that hopefully minimizes the secondary victimization that so many victims experience at the hands of a system. The training provided to advocates around the state also bolsters the exceptional services that we provide in our state for victims of crime. And it supports the collaboration that is necessary between community-based programs as well as system-based programs to make sure we're surrounding victims with the services they deserve to have. I would urge you to support the funding for Crime Victim Services Division and the Department of Justice funding and help us continue to work toward fostering an environment in Oregon that prioritizes victim safety and supports trauma-informed response for anyone who's hurt by victim who's hurt by crime in our state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Stark and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Roland Schwartz. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force. We are a statewide, non-governmental, nonprofit organization with over 100 multidisciplinary members that represent the state of Oregon and who serve on one of eight subcommittees for the task force. And they help us advance our mission of a survivor-centered, trauma-informed approach to the response to and prevention of sexual violence in Oregon. I'm pleased to be here today to urge your support of the Department of Justice budget, particularly the Crime Victim Services Division. And while others have talked about various aspects of CVSD programming, the work that I want to discuss today is really around the Sexual Assault Task Force and that of the Sexual Assault Victims Emergency Medical Response Fund, otherwise known as the SAVE Fund. The Sexual Assault Task Force has three programs, our Sexual Assault Training Institute, some of which Kim has shared a little bit about the impact of that work already today, our Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner Certification Commission, and our Prevention Program. In the interest of brevity, I will just share briefly the impact of our Sexual Assault Training Institute. Following the passage of House Bill 3476, which established advocate privilege for qualified victim service programs in Oregon, the task force was able to leverage funding from the Department of Justice to train over 1,100 campus practitioners and provided intensive training and technical assistance in the response to student survivors at our two-year, four-year public and private institutions. Since implementation and training, we have seen a 120% increase in students deciding to participate. 138% increase in student survivors accessing services, and a 120% increase in students deciding to participate in the Title IX investigation and adjudication process. Additionally, by leveraging DOJ funding, the task force is able to bring nearly $1.5 million of additional funding to our work, and that includes state, federal, and foundation funding. And all of this really supports a more trauma-informed, survivor-centered response to sexual violence in Oregon. And while we still have a lot of work to do, it's facilitated both a statewide and national reach, making Oregon a model for other states. The last point that I want to make is around the Sexual Assault Victims Emergency Medical Response Fund, or the SAVE Fund. Oregon is second in the nation in rates of violence against women. So making access to comprehensive medical treatment, forensic evidence collection, and counseling services critically important. The SAVE Fund reduces barriers to services, mitigates the trauma experienced by a victim, and increases offender accountability when victims have access to a sexual assault forensic evidence kit. Access to a medical forensic exam is the critical access point to receiving comprehensive medical treatment, and reduces the financial burden on victims who seek medical and counseling treatment after experiencing sexual trauma. And for these reasons, we urge your support of the Department of Justice budget. Thank you for your time.
Are there any questions? So I'm going to take just a quick moment here. Both for full disclosure, I'm quite convinced it's not actually a conflict of interest, and also a plug at the same time. You guys have heard me mention that from time to time, my wife, who's a professional counselor, sees clients who are through the Crime Victims Compensation Program. She's not currently seeing anyone. I do all of her billing, so I know who she is and is not seeing. But that program is absolutely amazing. And one of the things that's so unique about it, or so precious about it, is oftentimes it's people who, oftentimes children, who are going through that process of waiting for court against their abuser, and the opportunity to receive counseling as they are going to testify frequently against a family member, or you know, relative, that sort of thing, and to have that counseling long before there's ever some sort of judgment that might help reimburse that. So anyway, fantastic program. There's my plug and my disclosure. So, all right, thank you for your testimony. Okay. All right, next up we have Sybil Hebb and Allison Kelly.
I'm going to make those disclosures now. I'm going to do it later.
You can make whatever you want.
Okay.
Whatever you want. You guys have an event you get to plug, right? All right, I mean, this is like plug your event day.
The thought crossed my mind.
Yeah, it will be an event if I make it to the gym, I think. So, Chair Stark, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here today to speak about the services that are funded through the Crime Victim Services Division. As you all know, the Oregon Law Center provides civil legal assistance to low-income people, and our mission is to help people achieve access to justice. Our clients, the top two drivers of people coming into our offices seeking help are domestic and sexual violence or housing, and those two things are our two highest priorities. And in terms of our assistance to people seeking help about domestic and sexual violence, the primary requests that they have are for assistance in achieving a restraining order or some form of a protection order, or in achieving safe visitation or custody or parenting time determination for themselves and their children. But fundamentally, their goal is to get and stay safe. We can't help people with their legal claims if they don't have a safe place to spend the night, if they don't have the counseling and the support and the safety structures that they need in order to assure their security. Then getting to the courthouse or getting to a legal aid office is necessarily going to be a lower priority. And so we really rely on the services that are provided through the Crime Victim Services Division to help save the lives of our clients and also to help facilitate our ability to provide them with access to justice. There are just a couple of pieces that I wanted to mention. I want to echo the comments and support the comments that have gone before me. Many people have spoken about the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund. I think the point that I would make is that that's the only source of general fund state assistance for those programs, for the shelter network across the state, and those dollars are extremely rare. In 2015 alone, there were 10,000 requests for assistance that were not able to be met. And so that's a person in an emergency situation seeking help, seeking a way to get out. And that's the highest danger point for a survivor when they're taking that step and not having a place to go. And then having to think about, you know, and we have stories of advocates who are thinking about or talking to somebody on the phone, well, you know, do you have a car you can sleep in? Can you ride the MAX? Can you get to the airport? Is the airport open? You know, these are the practical considerations that people are going through so that they can avoid being in an unsafe home. And we know that when people are not able to get out, they're subject to extremely dangerous situations. Fatalities are extremely, unfortunately, common. In 2015 and 16 together, there were 85 deaths as a result of domestic violence. That's men, women, children. It's not necessarily just the primary victim or the family members. Sometimes bystanders, law enforcement is often caught in the crossfire. These are very, very dangerous situations. And in the last 3 months alone of 2017, just these first 3 months of the year, 16 people have died. So these are issues that end lives. If they don't end lives, the impacts can be lifelong. And for children, especially, they're a third of the cases in the child welfare system are connected in some way to domestic violence in the home. And I think you'll hear more about that next. So I think the point that I would make about the Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund is that these are cost-effective services. If a person has access to a safe place to spend the night and access to support and safety counseling, there's a 60% to 70% reduction in severity and incidence of future assaults. So there's a direct correlation between future safety and access to services. And there are sites in my written testimony online to those services, most of them conducted through the CDC or through the Johns Hopkins Medical University. So these are cost-effective services to provide. The only other point I would make is that individual services to survivors in need they're hugely important. The Crime Victim Services, Crime Victims Compensation Program, the District Attorneys-based Victims Assistance Programs, those are all individual services that make a difference on a immediate level. The Attorney General's Office has also been very committed to trying to make a difference at a systemic level. And the Domestic Violence Resource Prosecutor and the Elder Abuse Resource Prosecutor, our offices have had the opportunity to participate in statewide trainings and development of materials, and we've just been so impressed and grateful for the work that comes from that office in really raising the standard of practice and bringing us all together to learn how we can work together to stop this problem. So thank you.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Representative Stark, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Allison Kelly, and I'm serving as the CEO of Liberty House, the Child Abuse Assessment Center that serves Marion and Polk Counties. And I also have the privilege to serve as the chair of the board of directors of the Oregon Network of Child Abuse and Intervention Centers. And I am here in support of House Bill 5015 and in support of the Attorney General and her fabulous staff. It's one thing to administer grants, and it's another thing to build relationships. And her staff and Shannon Seville, those who run the Crime Victim Services Division, do an absolutely amazing job in helping provide technical assistance and information and administering. The particular grant that funds the child abuse centers is the Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Account. That's pursuant to ORS 418-746. And that really is what drives that engine of that multidisciplinary response that I know we've talked about before. And I think that's the one thing that I'd like to highlight today is it just takes a system. We know that DHS is working very hard. Our caseworkers are working very, very hard, and I applaud those caseworkers who go into these incredibly difficult homes under all kinds of circumstances. That system in ORS 418-747, where the DA in every county convenes that team, is there for a reason, so that you have multiple eyes on these cases. Those caseworkers call us at Liberty House and our colleagues all over the state. Can you help me understand this bruise? Help me understand what I'm seeing. And that's necessary because it helps us triage. So I'm here, first of all, just to say thank you to the Attorney General and her staff. Thank you for the CAMI funding. Not every state has that, so we're very, very lucky to have that. I'm also a little nervous. I'm a little nervous about some of the photographs that we staffed and we saw just yesterday on a kiddo with bruises beyond belief. We're getting between 5 and 10 calls in addition to our full slate of kiddos. And in my letter, I'm not going to go into it now because it's really just too much, but I do hope that you'll read my letter. It provides the detail of what we're seeing. What you heard earlier about the internet crimes against children is not hyperbole. It's real, and it's getting worse. The physical abuse, sex abuse, is real, and it's getting worse. I think that's one of the reasons that DHS is having such a hard time. So I ask you to at least please continue the current level of funding, if at all possible. I'd also like to introduce a thought. If there is any possibility to increase that CAMI support to child abuse centers across the state, I know right now we can't keep up with the demand. I need another medical provider, and that's at least a minimum of $125,000 to $250,000 when you add in malpractice and benefits and all that, in order to keep up with those Carleys, and that's just one center serving two counties. We've done a survey at the Oregon Network. We know where the forensic interviews are needed. And frankly, without those services, we can't help DHS because we don't have the interviewers and the doctors who are there to answer their questions. With those services, we can help them. And I suspect that you would see fewer, you know, closed at screening, and then fatality, and more successful investigation and safety plans for children. So we work together, and that's the point. It's the system. So I would encourage a dialogue if there is at all room for that. I think there's a return on investment. I know there is, because of the ACEs study. When we drive down the street and we see the homeless people and teens and people really struggling, it's not outside the realm of possibility that there's a story there of abuse and trauma that led them to use the alcohol, the drugs, and that makes it hard to keep a job, and that makes it hard to keep a home. It's, we have to understand the whole system. So with that, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support for all of our colleagues. We're really talking about violent family violence when you listen to our DV and sexual assault advocate partners and the children. You know, it's just not a pretty picture. And so we applaud the help. I think both of us see the need and appreciate any thought that can be given to that. Having said that, on April 25th at 5:30, we are welcoming and have invited all legislators from all over the state. There will be directors of centers from all over the state, and it's the tag end of Child Abuse Prevention Month. I do believe our Attorney General is also hoping to come. And with that, we'll be celebrating what can happen when communities come together for the benefit of children protecting. We'll be highlighting new mental health services that we've been able to add, the expansion, the child-friendly environment, a children's garden that we've put in with the help of many, many donations and partners, and honoring our elected officials and public leaders. So thank you for your leadership, and we hope to see you there.
Well, thank you for your very valuable and important work that you do. Rep. Sanchez.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to say that most of my colleagues are, of course, aware that I came from doing this very work here and, you know, created the Native American Family Healing Circle in Portland. It's the first actually urban-based, culturally specific Native American domestic violence program on the West Coast. And so I'm very familiar with the, you know, Crime Victim Services Division, ODSVS. I am paid in part by some of those funds very minutely at this point because I'm stepping quite a bit away from that. But I also just want to mention, let me just say specifically ODSVS, VAWA, VOCA, and there might be a tiny bit of DHS. I don't think so, though. I think those are the three main ones that I have minute pieces of. But I do want to also mention that early in the 2000s, when the ODSVS, Oregon Domestic Violence Services Act, came through the legislature, we actually asked for $25 million, and we got $2.5. So that was back then. And again, that exponentially is saying over and over again that the services for domestic violence are not properly funded for sexual assault, and clearly child abuse issues are not well funded. And we know that we're in a crisis moment here in terms of funding for those services, but we also know that had we even had some of that funding, 15 years ago, we could be in a different place right now with some of those issues. So put that plug in there. I've been advocating from the other side of this, from where you sit now, for many, many years, and I think we just need to bite the bullet at some point.
Representative Stark, if I may just respond to that, I do want to thank the Attorney General. I know that there had been a cut to those CAMI funds in back in 2011, and I think she was responsible for restoring some of those in 2013, so every little bit helps.
Great. Well, thank you again. Is there anybody who didn't have an opportunity to sign up that wanted to testify? All right. And Senator Hayward.
Can I just express my thanks for Attorney General Rosenblum for coming and sitting through the hearing here? We don't see a lot of agency directors and statewides who do that, and I think it reflects exactly what we've heard here today about her commitment to really connecting with the people that the Department of Justice serves and her seeing herself as not above anybody but as part of an important team that serves people across the state. So I just want to thank you, Madam Attorney General, because that demonstrates the kind of commitment that we've been hearing from people throughout the testimony today. So thank you very much.
And Madam Attorney General, would you, if you so desire, you are more than welcome to make any sort of closing thoughts or comments or, you know, or respond to anything you heard today if you desire.
Thank you, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee. I just want to
You do
appreciate,
have to tell us your name, though.
My name's Ellen Rosenblum. I'm the Oregon Attorney General. And thank you, Senator Steiner Hayward, very much for those remarks. But it is truly my honor to be able to come here and to greet the wonderful people who work out in the field day to day, hands on with the survivors and the victims. It's so important that we show our support and our respect for the work that they do. So that is my incredible honor. And also, I so appreciate the law enforcement and other support that we received here for the work that we do to help keep our communities safe. It was really very touching to hear those remarks. And there are many others who sent letters. And I know that the Hillsborough police officer chief, I believe, sitting next to me had to leave, but he also had wanted to testify and indicated his regret that he couldn't stay. I'm not sure what happened there. But anyway, thank you so much for your attention throughout these 4 days. We really appreciate it. I hope you can tell from the presentations that my staff made that we really love the work that we do, and we just want to do the best job possible. And so to the extent that you can see fit to provide us with the funds that we have requested, we promise to continue to do a good job and hopefully to make you and the citizens of our state proud. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the presentation throughout the week, and thank you, everybody, for coming. On that note, anything further up here?
Good to go.
Okay. Well, then we will close our public hearing on House Bill 5015, and we are adjourned.